to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm here today with Roman Roberts, who's in charge of all things at Blue Sphinx Consulting. How you doing, Roman?
Hey, how are you, Travis? I'm super pumped for this.
You know, we've talked like, I don't know, a dozen times, and we finally found room on my calendar to get this done. For those of you listening, I got on Roman's show and we had a lot of fun. And I'm like, hey, you should grab some time on my calendar. And if you don't do it right away, you're not going to do it. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll totally do it. And then a couple of days later, he's like, you're booked till like 2021, man. I was like, I told you to grab some time.
Yeah, you gotta listen to this guy. If you're working with this guy, you gotta listen to him. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I don't know if everyone feels the same way you do, but tell us what the magic is with Blue Sphinx Consulting and what you do.
Yeah, you know, the magic actually stems from me being an interrogator in the Army, but being a bad communicator. I couldn't communicate with those around me. I couldn't communicate with friends and family. And that drove me to really look into what I was doing as far as communication. And I got my own personal help and went through that journey. And then that helped me realize that, you know, there's a lot of businesses out there that think they communicate efficiently, that think they have good processes, that think they really know what they're doing. And truthfully, they don't. And so I would sit down with them and start helping them look at it. You know, is your verbal message matching what you're actually doing, right? Does your mission statement really reflect that? And so we would just sit down and take it back from the basics and really, you know, I hate to use that word strategize because I feel like that's overuse in the consulting space, but that's what we would do. You know, from my experience working in aerospace and working with nonprofits and working in the financial sector, and then being an interrogator with special operations, like it gave me a broad swath of experience that I could take to these businesses, and especially inside of the nonprofit space where, you know, they don't have the resources to pay $10,000 for one person to get a certification. Whereas, you know, I have all of those certifications and I can kind of sort through the BS of the certifications and give them what they need to get to that next level.
You see, I think that's important. You know, those of you listening or that are longtime listeners, you know that I'm still active duty Navy, and we spend like an ungodly amount of our time training. Like, that is what we do. If you're in the military at any level, you are spending your time training. And then somehow in the nonprofit world, those veterans that were once training all day, every day, they don't. And they don't train and figure out what they're going to do. And they don't identify their real processes. They're busy doing instead of planning, creating, communicating. And that's what we're talking about today, is this communication piece. I mean, what was it about being a special forces interrogator that allows you to help others communicate?
You know, so it's two pieces. One, I always make the distinction that I was a support guy for them. I didn't go through the Q course. I didn't go through all that training. They brought me into their world. And I think that's a key thing for anyone to realize. Like, you can be great at one thing, but you're always going to need somebody to support you, right? That's why, you know, if you look at the military, they have those primary MOSs and those support MOSs. And they also, you know, just looking at their weapons and their equipment, they have a primary weapon and a secondary weapon, because you can be great at one thing, but you will always need something else. And so that helped me realize that I don't have to be the main guy, and I got to do some amazing things, but it doesn't change that being that support guy is a needed role and people need that. And we forget how important that role is. And then we have these bad consultants that put a horrible taste in our mouth, right? By creating these, well, here's all your problems, and if you pay me $3,000 a month, I can solve them, right? Like that puts a bad taste in people's mouth. And so I said, you know, what made me good working with special operations? And it was because I went in there with that servant mindset, and I went in there and said, I want to know what y'all need and I want to give it to you. And I want to teach y'all to be self-sufficient, right? Like, they could never do interrogations the way I could, but I could at least show them how to set the foundation for me to succeed. And I think that that's the biggest thing that really resonated with me as soon as I started finding my identity and finding out how I wanted to serve the community was, okay, I can still be that same support guy, and I can still give people the valuable support that they need in a world that's ever changing, because the one thing that never changes is communication. Like there's always some form of communication happening. I mean, just the other day, the Clubhouse app came out, right? And now everyone's all about that. But what's funny is that app is going to help people who are communicators win. If you can't talk, if you can't communicate, you're not going to win because you have these split seconds to really present yourself. And that's the same thing is true for businesses and especially in the nonprofit space, because you're asking for something 9 times out of 10 out of people's generosity, right? You're saying, hey, this is something I'm passionate about and I need your help, right? So how do you pitch it where you don't sound like a traveling salesman trying to give them a vacuum cleaner, right? Like you have, there's an art to it and there's an art to effective communication, which is why I'm writing that book right now based on everything I've learned from verbal communication, written communication, the West Point Negotiators course, multiple deployments. Like there is a way to communicate that can help you win. And there's a way to communicate that will make you lose.
Oh, that's without a doubt. I always bring up, you know, Jim Mattis's 3-step communication process. You know, what do I know? Who needs to know? And have I told them? It's beautiful in its simplicity, but it doesn't always help you figure out what it is that you're trying to say. You know, it's been a political turmoil has been a big thing, especially changing over hands of the presidency. And I'm not really looking to talk about that, but you can see the communication thing, how it changed, what people were hearing at one level, what people were hearing at another level. And the time we're recording this, Twitter and Facebook just kicked President Trump off of their platforms. And it brings up interesting questions like, is freedom of speech violated? Well, that's really directed towards the government. Well, did he say terrible things and incite violence? Maybe. Did the big tech companies, you know, effectively silence the president? Well, they didn't, because he can still do press releases and interviews and all that stuff. But where we're at in the society, they effectively cut the public off from the president, from that direct interaction with, you know, President Obama and President Trump. And I'm not here saying anything for or against the other person, but those communication paths and understanding what it is that you're trying to do and trying to convey and what that means, there's always that second layer. There's always that undertone. There's always that emotion. And when you rely on one type of communication, I used to teach safety course because I was an aviation safety officer. And we were talking about communication because a lot of the times with the pilot and aircraft mishaps, you end up with a communication problem. And they're like, the students are like, what do you mean there's no communication problems? Hold on, I'm texting and I'm nodding my head as I'm texting you. And then you read the text that I sent them. Are you reading it based on how I sent it? Or are you reading it based on how you feel? And they're like, ooh, what do you mean? I mean, if you're angry with me right now and you read this text, you might assume that I'm being obstinate or poking the bear. If we just had a great conversation and you're laughing and happy and you read this, you're going to feel an entirely different way about the same words that I used.
Yep. So I love that.
Businesses and nonprofits really decide what that effective communication is going to be and what it's going to look like. Do they test different things or they just let it fly and hope it sticks?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that because I was actually just talking about this the other day with some people and they were like, you know, our communication strategy is we just try things and see what works, right? Because that's how we've been trained on social media. Just put content out and people will engage with what they like. So for me, I have 3 steps to communication and it's very similar, but the simplicity of it is in the first step begins with you planning effective communication, right? So you have to know how you communicate. And you have to know the type of communication that you're trying to portray to other people or give to other people, right? And I say that this applies to every conversation, right? From the Starbucks barista to the board meeting. They all are what's going to grow and flex your communication muscles. And how you flex those muscles is then going to relate to how you continue to communicate. So I believe that you have to create that plan. You can't just go into it and say, I'm just going to try this out and see what happens. Now, as you're planning, you may do things and say, hey, this is a method I'm going to go after, but it's got thought behind it. You didn't just say, I'm going to throw it on the wall and see what sticks, right? Because when you do that, you set yourself up for those positions to really ostracize people, right? I mean, not to get too political, but one of the key points that people always make around Donald Trump is that they feel like he just says whatever's on his mind, right? while people like authenticity, they want to know that there's a thought pattern behind that authenticity. They want to know that you're not just trying to be a bull in a china closet, right? Because we all like safety and security. Like, let's go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There has to be safety. Safety's paramount, right? Which feeds into my second path of communication, which is building that strong rapport, creating a safe conversation, creating a safe space for communication. Because no matter who you are, you're going to want to build safety in conversation. Mm-hmm. And people go, well, you can succeed by being me. Yeah, you can. Look, I was an interrogator. I did great manipulating people, but it's not sustainable. And especially not in the nonprofit world, right? Because in the nonprofit world, I sometimes see, and this happens a lot in the veteran space, not to call veterans out, but they will very much say, like, I'm just going to go with this little platform and kind of like piggyback on this veteran mentality and things like this. Well, that's not true to your brand. That's not true to you. That's not your true message. So when you do that, yeah, you'll get an initial influx, but you won't keep it because they'll see that, wait a minute, what he's saying and what he actually does are two totally different things, right? And then that erodes the safety because we feel like the person that we talk to, we can't trust, right? So it goes back to that safety. Now, there are some situations, right, where taking away safety in a conversation can work, right? Mainly inside of police and interrogations, but even inside of business, you know, if you have employees who are not performing and time after time after time, you've tried to do these things, then yes, you can go on with the, hey, like if you're not straight with me right now, you're out the door, right? Like mm-hmm. those type of things can occur. But when you're trying to communicate to the outside world or into the inside world, I always say it's easier to ramp up than to ramp down, right? So you want to build that safety and build that good communication in such a way that people go, wow, everything they say comes together, right? Because we like things that are aesthetically pleasing to us, right? Look at the big social media influencers. Look at, you know, how we judge beauty, quote unquote, no matter what your stance is on that. Like, there is something to be said for symmetry, right? Art, we look for symmetry, right? So all these different things, like cars, we want them to have these sleek lines and the smooth style and all of this, right? These are all pieces that we look at. And why do those appeal to us? Because they're safe, they're secure, they create this focal point, this aesthetic that we can all pull off of. And so the same thing's true with communication. We do it so often that we think that we're all great at it. And we think that we all understand the art to it. When really and truly, a perfect example is breathing, right? Everyone thinks they breathe great, but then you hire a breath coach and they'll tell you, dude, you're doing it all wrong. In through your nose, out through your mouth, right? And people forever have just been like, just breathing. Oh, I just do it. It just happens, right? So anytime you have that, I just do it mentality, or this is the way that we've always done it mentality, that's definitely, those are two big flags that you need to look at what your communication is, because it's probably become stale.
You know, you said something that I really wanted to talk about. You talked about creating a safe environment to talk. And if we look at some of the hot button topics just interpersonally around the globe, we talk about politics, sex, money, and religion. And I think one of our biggest failings is that we're not able or seemingly able to create a space where we can talk about these things openly. Yeah, we can talk about management, but as soon as you talk about personal money management, all of a sudden people feel attacked. You know, we talk about sex, but we're the Puritans that came over, so that's taboo. And we can talk about, you know, religion, but only if we're talking about the same religion. Well, unless you're talking about one of the 40 some odd sects of Christianity, right? Why is it different here and there? I'm going to bring up politics again, but I'm not going to get into the discussion of what it was. But we were flying to Hawaii. We had waited like 15 years to do our honeymoon because we were poor, right? You're broke and you spend money on the things that really matter. And we're flying out there and my wife fell asleep right away. She's not a big fan of travel. And I was sitting next to a gal from the Bay Area, and I've been stationed in Oklahoma at this point for like 15 years. And which is, you know, a red state. And I was like, hey, I'm interested in having this discussion about the candidates at the time. I think the big three were Hillary, Donald Trump, and Gary Johnson. And I was like, look, I really don't understand some of this stuff. Would you be interested in having a discussion about it? And you see the kind of the squirm in the chair a little bit. I'm like, look, I'm really asking because I don't understand some stuff. At this point, I'm going to say that I hadn't voted. I had always just assumed that all the candidates were terrible people and weren't going to, you know, they weren't interested in what I was interested in. And then my buddy challenged me, like, well, tell me what you really know about them. And I was like, nothing. He called me out on it. And so I was interested in learning. I was following the Democrats, the Libertarians, and the Republicans. I was following the three candidates. I had been reading stuff that they had written and done. And I was like, I'd love to have this conversation to get a new viewpoint, but, you know, lay some ground rules out, because I'm going to ask from a place of understanding that I don't understand some of this stuff. And if we're talking about a specific person, whatever, whichever candidate, we have to answer of that candidate, because so many times, like, well, tell me why this candidate did this. And they usually, the response is, well, this other candidate did that. That wasn't the goal here. The goal was to create the context for the conversation so we could talk about some of those things. And we were in the air for a couple of hours. We talked politics almost the entire time. At no point did she feel uncomfortable. I gave her the option to stop anytime she wanted. And we covered a lot of ground, and we're able to see different viewpoints. You know, we talked about guns. And I think the thing at the time was, you know, it's easier to get a gun than a library card. And I challenged that a little bit. I was like, well, do you have a library card? She's like, yeah, it's hard to get. She's like, no. I was like, do you think that getting a gun is easier than that? And she's like, well, no. I was like, well, have you ever tried to go buy one? And she's like, you know, I haven't. I was like, wouldn't it be interesting if you grabbed you and your friends and go to a sporting goods store and see what it takes for yourself? Buy one, don't buy one. That's not the point here. And see what it takes. You know, challenge that thing that you've heard, or it's been drilled into your head. Give it the sniff test and see, you know, what happens for you. Now, I don't have this gal's contact information. I don't know if she did it or not. And the point wasn't to get her to come to my side or me to her side, but to challenge the thought and the process behind something that you have ingrained in you. When's the last time you really challenged that self? And, you know, to be able to create a safe place where some, you know, stranger was able to talk to me about, you know, differing viewpoints and what that might look like and why we feel the way that we do feel. I thought it was very productive, but it wouldn't have happened unless we created that framework and we operated within it.
And you raise a great point to that, right? Because while I say safety, I also want people to understand, and I tell this a lot to the people that I work with, safety does not always mean comfortable. Yes, we want the overarching conversation to have a tone of comfort, and we want people to feel safe that they can communicate. But sometimes in having safe conversations, you're going to talk about uncomfortable topics. You're going to touch on the racism that's happening right now. You're going to touch on the political unrest. You're going to touch on the fact that, hey, the way that you're managing your business is costing you money, not making you money, right? Like, those are uncomfortable conversations that can be had in a safe way. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I can come from it from the approach like what you did. Hey, I want to understand, right? So teach me, right? I can come from the approach of, you're doing a lot of things right, but what if you did this, right? So now I'm appealing to your pride and saying you're doing good, but what if you did this? Could you do better, right? And everyone wants to be better, whether we admit it or not. We all know that we can be better, but we always feel that people don't approach us in the right way to do that. So in building safe conversation, I don't want to shy away from uncomfortable topics, right? And the only way a business grows, especially in the nonprofit space, is if you're going to have a safe space for that conversation in such a way that people can say, hey, CEO of this dog leash company, I hate the fact that we do meetings every Monday at 9 a.m. when we all have a status report due to you at 10, right? Like, that's an uncomfortable thing to say. But if you create that safety, they can say that. And then you go, oh, wow, yeah, that actually doesn't line up time-wise. I should probably shift something, right? Because the little things are what crush you. It's never, I won't say never, always and never bad words to say. But majority of the time, it's not the major things that are killing you. It's a bunch of little things that are eating away at your message, right? It's your mission statement saying something that you haven't looked at in 3 years, that then your website shows videos that don't match that. It's your policy on, you know, leave when everyone knows that you'll just let people go whenever they want, right? It's what you're saying, not matching what you're doing 9 times out of 10.
That's interesting. I wonder, you know, like, so where does, like, I deal mostly with, you know, startup and new nonprofits. Like, how does someone go through the process of, you know, defining their communication? Is there like a, oh, like they've been operating for a few months and now there's a question of, you know, how do they handle something, but they don't have like this written policy? I know that I've talked in the past, to check out my interview with Debbie Corge. We talked through a whole litany of policies and procedures, and she's got a little PDF in there with a list of like 200. It's not 200, but it's a massive list of what policies and procedures you might have in place. I know we touched on like four of them, but like, how does an organization decide what a policy should really look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's tons of formats out there, right? I'm a fan of the ISO 9001 standard of policies. So for me, that's kind of what I build those policies off of. But again, to your deeper question, right? How does that communication of that policy work? As an organization, when you start, you should be thinking, hey, I'm going to communicate my message out. I'm going to do this, right? Because any kind of nonprofit, you have a mission, right? Whether your mission is to help children in foster care or to provide dog leashes to service dogs, you have a mission, right? And so it begins with that right there, because in all honesty, that's your cornerstone. That's your pillar, right? Whatever you're telling people your mission is, that's what they're constantly going to come back to. That's almost your anchor statement, so to speak. So what's your anchor statement look like? And when you built it, did you put in the thought of it of, hey, this is just my passion and this is what I feel, right? So I just wrote it down. I put all my feelings down, because while that's authentic, does that communicate well, right? Mm-hmm. So it begins with that right there. Does your mission statement reflect, right? And is it actually something that people can hear and understand and instantly go, I get what they do, right? But then the next level to that is when you're writing your policies and procedures, I'm a firm believer that the moment you start a company, you should be thinking about it becoming the biggest company in the world, right? So how do you handle HR? How do you handle operations? How do you handle finance? How do you handle onboarding and offboarding, right? Because the problem I see is a lot of companies do this stuff. The CEO handles everything at first because it's a startup and they don't write anything down. And then they bring on 10 people because they need 10 people. And those 10 people have no clue how to do it. So then they're trying to do everything for those 10 people. And they're like, oh my gosh, I have no time to grow my business. And I'm so frustrated at the people that I work with. When truthfully, it's not the people that you work with. It's the fact that you just said, hey, I know I need you. You seem like someone who can handle it. So now go and handle it. But then you didn't give them that space to handle it, right? So communication is also giving some of that freedom. But when you write those policies, you give them that roadmap. And then now safe communication comes into play. They look at that policy and they go, hey, Roman, you're telling me this is how you want to run operations? I don't think that's effective. Like, what if we looked at this piece right here? Right. And so when you do that, it creates this way that people have safety, but written policies last. So you have a communication style that stays forever and becomes an additional pillar of your business. So I always tell businesses that I work with, put your mission statement in your policy. It doesn't have to be in there. There's no requirement inside of any standards or anything like that, but put it in there. Whether it's at the very first page, put that mission statement in there. So as the person's reading the policy, much like you said, right, based on the conversation you have with someone previously, that's how they refer to a text message. So how do I want my business to look at my policies and procedures? Look at the way that I want them to do operations. I want them to look at it through the lens of, I'm achieving my mission every day by following this procedure. And so when you have a strong mission statement, then you put that in a policy and procedure, and people start reading through that policy and procedure, they're reading through it of the lens of, does this relate to helping foster children, right? Or does this relate to providing veterans affordable housing, right? And then they can look at it and go, no, it doesn't, because I'm wasting money, because I'm wasting time in how I process applications, right? So then they start seeing that. And now you've created continuous improvement gurus inside of your business who are helping you become more efficient because they're embodying the mission statement that you constantly keep hitting them with, right? Because in communication, the more that you hear something, you all of a sudden start valuing it. It becomes important because of the repetition, right? We know that inside of training, inside of fitness, inside of any space, repetition is key. So once you create a strong mission statement, that needs to be going out all day, every day, almost like a broadcast on a loop. So people are hearing it, ingraining it, and then viewing everything through that lens, because we want them looking through that lens.
You touched on a couple of things in that last little, I guess it wasn't a rant, but
You died. It was a rant. We can call it.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely a rant. You got to communicate. touch a little bit on my experience. I went to the Naval War College and went through a 12-week course on the naval planning process and what that looked like. And, you know, you're analyzing the enemy, you're analyzing your own forces, finding the weak spot, all this stuff, like really in-depth stuff. And then you get to where you're actually writing the policies and procedures, the instruction about how are people going to go out and execute this mission and what does this look like? And the big thing that we talked about is in any bullet point where you're telling someone what to do, it's a two-part statement. You have a task and a purpose. Like, we are going to communicate on social media is the first half in order to convey what we have available, what we do, what our next thing is to our audience, whatever that statement looks like. I'm not too familiar with the ISO 9001 framework, and I don't know if my listeners are either. Can you tell us what the ISO 9001 framework looks like?
Yeah, so it's the International Standard Organization. It's kind of their baseline quality management procedures for a lot of nonprofits, you know, trying to go after certain things, certain government contracts and things like that will require it. Not everyone, obviously, but you can be ISO compliant without being ISO certified, right? So to me, it feels like a no pressure thing to do, right? Because it builds strong policies. It gives you a checklist. It gives you an audit list. It tells you all the key things you need, right? So it gives you the roadmap for, you know, a couple $100. And now you can say you're compliant. And then if you ever need to become certified, you're already 9/10 of the way there. But what it does is it essentially lays out very similar to what you're saying, right? Here's what my organization does. Here's the policies that we use to keep ourselves accountable to that, right? It has a big section on, you know, leadership accountability. Are the executives coming to the table, reviewing the policies, being a part of the discussions? And it has big pieces on continuous improvement and auditing, right? Because a key thing is that we keep track of how our business is moving, that we're tracking those metrics. And it's a very simple format, right? It has, you know, the policy. So let's go with, you know, let's go with continuous improvement. It has continuous improvement. And then it says, you know, why did we create this policy? What's the purpose of it? What are we trying to do? Right. And then I personally tell everyone to add in that mission statement, because again, you've told them why this specific policy matters, but you want them to go back to that. It relates to our mission. And then once you do that, you kind of outline what it is you do. You write down what you do, and you write it down in a way that follows a format, is easy to read through, is easy to understand. But inside of that format, you're also telling people, hey, this is how we respond to these problems, right? Because 9 times out of 10 inside of a business, people are firefighting. They're just chasing after whatever problem is going on and trying to solve it. What ISO does is it gives you these policies that say, I don't have to worry about the mundane day-to-day problems that come up because I have a policy that covers that. I know what to do when this happens. Like, let's think back to the military, right? When you go through military training, you learn like these repetitive tasks of how to, you know, handle a weapon if it has a misfeed. Well, that slap method becomes something that people then know beyond a shadow of a doubt. Oh, if I have a misfeed, the next thing I do is this. Well, that's what those policies are meant to do as well. Hey, metric came back bad. We're down 30% in sales. You're going to need to sit down and identify what's happening. But that's where we tie back to safety and communication and saying, hey, safe communication means that when we're down like this, when we've identified this red flag, we take these actions. So people know we're coming into a room to take these actions. So nobody's surprised, right? Because a big part of safety is not surprising people, right? When you randomly throw something on someone or you put them outside of their comfort zone in such a drastic way, now all of a sudden they don't feel safe. They don't feel comfortable. But if they know, hey, if we're down 30%, these are the things that are going to occur because this is the policy that I was trained to when I walked in the door. And this is the mission to provide, you know, quality dog leashes to service dogs. Then they know, okay, when this happens, this is what we're going to do so we can get back to providing quality to those service members that need it, right? And now again, we're linking everything back to that anchor. So when you have a standardized policy to do that, it makes it so much easier. It makes it so much quicker. And it eliminates that fear and confusion. And it's when we have fear and confusion that people then try to fill that space. Like if you've ever sat in a room with a bunch of people and it gets really quiet, watch the people who all of a sudden start trying to fill the conversation. 9 times out of 10, they're filling it out of a place of fear or out of a place of uncomfortableness, right? Like, hey, the conversation just died. What do we do now, right? So they try to fill it. Well, people will do that inside of your business. If you don't give them the communication of what to do, they're going to try to fill it. And then they're going to fill it with something you may not want them to fill it with.
Yeah,
and now you have to deal with that.
Put down the blowtorch. That's not how we fix this.
Exactly.
For those of you CEOs, founders, executive directors, maybe board presidents listening to this, you're like, ah, but it sounds so time consuming. Imagine if you have a policy that's going to answer a question an employee comes to you with, and you don't ever have to answer it again because it's already written in the policy. Now, if it's not laid out the way you want it to, and it leaves some ambiguity or leaves some questions are going to come to you, and then you solve that ambiguity. But then in theory, you just save them ever asking the question of you again. You just bought yourself a lifetime of time of avoiding that future question. That's like, hey, I know we talked about this 67 times, but I can't remember what you said. And you're like, dude, do you take notes? Like, have you ever held a thought in your head before? And this is just a little frustration that you might feel. But if you have it, you know, codified in a policy, then the answer is available to them. And then you encourage people to, oh, hey, did you read the policy on blah, blah, blah? And like, is the answer in there? Yes. Yeah. Like, don't bother me. Like, go take care of what you can take care of before coming into here. I wanted to say one little thing that you see, keep bringing it back to mission statement. And I think it would be doing my listeners a disservice if I didn't touch on mission statements a little bit. You have to decide what your mission statement looks like. Is it broad on purpose to allow you to do a lot of things? Or is it niche down and laser focused because you only want to help dogs that only have left feet? Whatever your thing is, you know, if I look at mission statements for like TED, it's two words, it's spread ideas. You know, Smithsonian, their mission statement is to increase diffusion of knowledge. Like, that's it. It doesn't have to be three sentences long. It doesn't have to be complicated. Does that tell you what they do and everything that they've done meets that mission statement? Absolutely. But you're going to have policies and procedures that are going to talk about things like employee conduct and retention that don't necessarily have to deal directly with the mission. Directly, like indirectly, it takes care of standardization within. It gives employee safety, security, and those kind of things. But it isn't maybe directly tied to the mission, but allows your organization to do the things that it needs to do by taking care of the people within.
Yeah, and I will say for most of those people who have, you know, 5, 8, 10 sentence mission statements, it distills down to 1 or 2 sentences, right? Like it normally does. And that's the other thing about communication. We try so hard to put so much into communication, right? Like we want to give everyone the detail. And when I was going through the Wicklander-Zulawski course, which is a written statement analysis that police officers use when they're analyzing sworn statements, when you look at those, you can tell when people are just trying to use filler words. There's certain ways that sentences flow and structure and things like that. The same thing applies to mission statements, because you see these organizations and you think, I have to have a long mission statement. You know, it's like you said, it can be as simple as one sentence. You know, police officers, to protect and serve, right? Like that's their mission statement. And then everything flows into that, right? And so I challenge a lot of these businesses when they go, here's my mission statement. And it's on this giant placard on a wall and it's this long paragraph. And I'm like, dude, people stop reading after the first 4 words. Like, sorry, man.
They're not reading it. And you can't train your employees, your volunteers, your board members to regurgitate that if it's not succinct.
Yeah. Like, why do we remember Nike? Just do it, right? Like these very simple things are what resonate with us, right? And that's kind of what I always challenge businesses to think of. Like, are you overcomplicating communication because that's what you quote unquote have been told to do, or you've been doing all this time, right? Like it doesn't have to be these crazy long things. And when you're writing your policies and procedures, it may only be 4 or 5 subpoints, right? The process for onboarding may not be extremely extensive, and that's okay. You don't have to have a 50-page policy. But what happens is people try to do that, right? To validate, to show that it's an important policy, to show that we want to read it. but how much of it is fluff and how much of it is real communication, right? Again, we get back to that. Communicating efficiently and effectively means communicating in the least amount of words possible.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, for those of you like, dude, well, you're in the Navy. Like, what is the Navy? How does the Navy do this? Well, when we go through and we're doing this planning and we're doing all the things that we're doing, we have our own mission statement. We call it commander's intent. Commander has said that he wants to do this. And just like Roman is saying, everything that we do has to be woven with the thread of commander's intent. If we're talking about, you know, if our job is to secure the beach and someone comes up with the idea like, well, we need to set up an ice cream shop, you know, that's a good idea. Like, we like ice cream, but does that meet commander's intent of securing the beach? Well, it doesn't. So maybe it belongs in another plan or for another time. And there's nothing wrong with that. For the event that you have coming up, is your event a fundraiser or a fundraiser? Which one is it? Are you inviting yourself to your own party? What does that look like to you? If your goal is to go out and you've got the money you need for the year and you're going out to have just a fundraiser, just to have a good time with the community, well, don't foul it up by asking for money. Yep. We always got to ask for money, Travis. No, you don't. No, you don't. You can say thank you. You can have fun. You can talk about whatever. You can take up, do a pie in the face, whatever the thing is to have a good time. But if the mission of that event is to raise friends, then keep all this stuff that has nothing to do with raising friends out of that event.
And I tell nonprofits, when you're communicating, stop thinking about everything in terms of ROI. Like, I get it. Money is important, especially inside of the nonprofit space, because you're trying to turn a penny into 10 cents. I get it. But at the same time, if you're constantly focusing and trying to push everything back to money, that then becomes the mission. And that's not what you said your mission is. Again, right? Like, if your mission is money, say it's money, right? Like, now, how that's going to resonate with people, again, communication, how you present it, that's all critical. But 9 times out of 10, nonprofits are constantly in that space of asking for money because we need it. We need it. We need it. But when really and truly, your mission is to help. If you stick to that core of helping, right, creating, you know, affordable housing for veterans, the money will follow because people will go, holy cow, they are really on this mission to make affordable housing. So I am going to give to them, right? And now the reasons that people give may not be altruistic. That's totally different, right? Like, that's a totally different revenue stream and avenue that you can go down in communication. And I think that's more manipulative. And I don't think that serves the organization, especially inside the nonprofit. Because once you start dabbling in manipulation, you start dabbling in a space that when people find out, it discredits your brand. Because let's be perfectly honest, you as a nonprofit are a brand, and you're a bigger brand than Nike, Adidas, and all of that. And I know you don't want to hear it, but that's the truth. Because people are going to see, perfect example, there's a nonprofit that I know, Austin Angels, and they also have a nationwide chapter called National Angels, and they are dedicated to helping foster children. That is a brand. That those angel wings, when you see them, you know that that's National Angels spreading around the world trying to help foster kids, right? And if they all of a sudden start doing these mass manipulation things, people are going to know that and see that and associate that, right? We put a ton of time into creating this beautiful logo, but how much time do you put into hitting your mission statement? How much time do you put into writing that statement clear and concise in a way that relates back to everything you do, right? Because you want your employees to go out and say, I work for Austin Angels and we want to provide love to every foster child. That's simple. That's easy. And when you hear that, you go, damn, that sounds good. Yeah. I want to give foster kids love. Like, yeah, angels love, you know, yeah, like absolutely. Nobody's like, that's a horrible idea. We should not give them love. You know, like, that's the kind of thing. Like, you want it to be so, you want it to be Nike's Just Do It. And then you have to realize that when you create a Nike's Just Do It brand, that's going to follow you. And every action you take is either going to be a positive or a negative ROI for that. The ROIs don't always have to be dollars and cents. Sometimes it just has to be awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your fans are going to let you know if you're doing something off base. And I'm not talking about the time during COVID where you shifted or adjusted to deliver just a little bit differently or to help another group of people. I'm not talking about the short-term stuff. I'm talking about the long-term brand. Like, your brand is who people say you are when you're not around. That's what your brand is. If you're like, oh man, Roman, you're the best guy. You're the greatest. And then you walk away and like, man, did you see that guy's beard? Like, does he even take care of himself? And I know you guys aren't seeing this right now. Roman has a very well-trimmed beard. I salute your beard.
Thank you.
But it's what people say when you're not in the room. That's what a brand is. That's what you are as an entity. And if, you know, like there's been some brands in the past that have violated. There's been nationally recognized or internationally recognized veteran brands that have shot themselves in the foot and used money that doesn't go towards their mission. I don't say their name because I don't like talking bad about people that are not in the room. It burns me. Because I hate gossip, but you can look this up on your own. But when your money isn't going towards the mission, people have a problem with it. And when I say mission, I don't mean I don't have a paid staff. We're all volunteer. Everything goes to mission. Ensuring you have quality employees is going towards the mission. Overhead is not an evil word. Stop it.
Yes. And honestly, paying the money to write strong policies and saying, hey, I just raked out, you know, $5,000 to write all my policies and procedures, but that didn't go towards buying dog leashes for the service dogs. Okay. But does that make it where you can more efficiently provide service leashes for the next 50 years? Well, then now all of a sudden that ROI became a lot bigger, right? So you have to start looking in the moment. And again, that's what being clear about that communication is and knowing what your mission is, knowing how you want to communicate yourself. Because when someone goes to you, like when you're in front of the board, right? So this is for people speaking about the money they spend. Again, we're communicating effectively. So when we're doing that, we say, hey, I spent this $5,000 because I know that if we have strong policies, we will not have to go back to policy writing, meaning we can dedicate more time towards events to get leashes out there to people who need them. Who's going to argue with that, right? And that's part of what safe communication is, articulately describing what you're doing in such a way that someone can go, oh, wow, okay, yep, that makes sense. And that's why planning your method of communication, planning your style of communication is so important. Because if you're taking the time to review your conversations and plan your conversations, when you get presented with that, when you have to go to the board and justify, why did I just spend X amount of dollars? If you've already walked that conversation out, you have an idea of where it's going to go. I'm not saying you're going to always 100% get it right, but you're going to be able to play it out, both the positive and the negative, right? We need to start being our own devil's advocates inside of conversations and saying, hey, did we do this right? Did we do this wrong? Same thing with our mission statement. We need to start saying, playing devil's advocate. Did I write a mission statement that's going to further my organization? Or am I going to have to go back to this in 3 years and go, oh man, I did this wrong. I said this wrong, right? If we think about that up front, we get a lot less burn at the end. And that's what we want. We want more time to dedicate to our nonprofit. That's what every person listening to this podcast is wanting. How can I become more efficient, even if it's 1%, so that I can give that 1% back to the organization?
I know that when I did, you know, Navy planning and we were putting together policies and procedures and setting up operations and all these different things, we did some great work right up until we talked to another department. And then we realized that we were planning in the cone of silence or in a silo, and we didn't consider any of our other teammates or our support team how we were going to actually execute this thing. That's great that we want to, you know, move these people from here to there, but have you talked to the people that own the buses and the airplanes? Are you their only priority? Are you their top priority? Are you priority number five? Do they have the space for what you want to do? Because wanting to do something is one thing. Ensuring you have the means to get there is another thing. What do you tell organizations that are trying to have just one person in an organization write policy or have every department come up with their own policy without doing any crosstalk?
You know, I will tell you, neither method is wrong, right? Whether you have one person do it or a team, like either method can work. But again, it works based on communication, right? So we have to plan again, planning that communication. How are we planning? Are we looking at it and saying, okay, I'm going to do this and I need to reach out to these people? Or are we saying, hey, I'm going to do this and this is mine, I own it, right? Again, back to that CEO starting it out. When you build it, are you thinking about handing it off to other people? Or are you so focused and just build and do that you forget about that? So planning your communication doesn't begin and end with you as the CEO. Planning communication needs to go down to everyone else. And honestly, you know, I'm going to put together a little one pager about these three pillars, right? Planning effective communication, creating safe communication, and then reviewing conversations so that the listeners can see that and look at that, because that's critical, right? You can't be the only person planning and thinking about your conversation. Everyone in your organization has to embody that mindset of what am I communicating? How am I communicating? And am I doing it effectively? Because the next step of that would be, hey, I'm creating a policy on operations, and I know that the finance department is tied into operations because they receive the invoice. So, hey, as I'm planning this, I've written out what operations does. Now I need to go talk and create a safe space for finance to say, hey, look, not trying to step on your toes, but in operations, this is what we're doing, and we want to be able to be more efficient in how we do it. Can you take a look at this and see if anything we did steps on your toes or affects your department in a negative way that I didn't see, right? It's okay to say, hey, I don't know the full effect of this. We don't know what we don't know, and we don't know everything, all right? So you're going to have something you don't know. And so then if you can communicate that and create that safe space for that conversation, that person knows they can come to you and say, hey, look, this doesn't align with what we're doing. You're actually going to create a way bigger headache for us if you do this. Okay, well, what if we did this, right? So now you start continuously improving. Now you start adapting and thinking, and now your organization starts building trust in each other, right? Because why do we communicate? To build relationships, to communicate information, right? We have to think of communication and information as currency, right? When I'm giving you information, I'm doing it to fill up a bank, right? Whether that bank is knowledge, whether that bank is something that we can turn back to later on and reflect on, whatever it is. But if we don't start viewing it, right, knowledge is power is what we always say, but we forget that every communication we have is providing knowledge, whether good or bad, right? Because you can provide negative or positive ROI. And so when we're doing that, are you providing them that information that they can pull from? Are you giving them that currency that you can continue to exchange and grow and build off of, right? Because ROI exists for communication too. And we want to create communications that create investments, that create growth inside of our organization. Nobody wants to see their time result in nothing. And so if we're communicating efficiently, we're letting that become something that's effective. We're letting that become something that's valuable, right? Because now finance knows, hey, operations aren't these gunslingers that just do whatever they want. They actually want to help us. So now they maybe before they were talking behind the back and saying, oh, those operation guys are the worst. They just give us crappy invoices. Now maybe finance understands they give us crappy invoices because they don't even know what an invoice is. They wrote this policy with no clue what it is.
We want them to do.
Right.
If we told them what we want them to do. Wait, when I do these things, I keep bringing up the military because I've been doing it for 20 stinking years. There's nothing like saying, you know, go into another department and you've got this thing that you've created. You're like, hey, man, I'm not the pro in your area here. Take a look at this. Tell me what I missed. I know I missed something. What did I miss? I'm missing the boat on something. What is it? And I tell you what, asking someone for a favor is a great way to get them on your team. Like, I don't understand this whatever. Take a look at this. Tell me what I missed. I know I missed something. And all of a sudden you have their buy-in on the process because they know that you came to them, which tells them you think they're important and that they have a skill that you don't have. There's nothing like being the CEO or the whatever title that you have. And someone thinks you're walking around just being arrogant and you don't need them for anything. What a great way to cross that bridge. And the other thing we do, especially in aviation, is we create checklists. We're going through a procedure needs to be done, like, I don't know, building a podcast and all the things that have to do to go into the podcast. Well, you create the checklist. And how do you verify the checklist? You give it to the new guy and say, can you do the thing without any other input? And if any time they get stuck, they do something wrong, they get up and you missed a step. Or you have too many steps. It's not clear in communication. If you can get it to the new guy in some other department that doesn't know anything about what you do, and they can accomplish exactly what you wanted accomplishment in a timely manner and the way you wanted it done, then you know you've done it right. You've got your litmus test, you've got your QA, and people know exactly what it is that you're doing, and it'll make sense.
I love that. And you touch on a great point there, right? When you talk about, you know, come to people in a way saying, hey, I want to learn from you. inside of interrogation, there's multiple what we call approach strategies. And I think the one that's most commonly known by everyone is good cop, bad cop. But what you don't know is there's a lot of other things, right? Incentive and things like that. And I won't dive into all the tradecraft of it. But inside of nonprofits and business in general, right, as I've looked at this more and more and been involved in it more and more, I see two things that constantly rise to the top. Pride and ego up and a teach me approach. You know, like not a we know all, it's a you know all. So teach me, right? And giving people that power, making them feel important. And I'm not saying like a fake importance. It's true, right? Don't go to somebody who doesn't know and tell them, hey, I want you to feel like the most valuable person in the world. You're important. You know how to do this, right? Don't set them up for that failure. But for the people that do know and the people that you're communicating with, come to them in such a way that they know, hey, I respect you and appreciate what you do. And I understand that you have a skill that I don't have, because we all do, right? And when you communicate that to them, they're going to want to come back to you time and time again. They're going to want to be a part of the checklist because it makes them feel good. Like you said, right? Someone needs me. But also they'll start seeing that it takes work off of their plate. They'll start seeing that what you're doing is a benefit to them. So if you're going to go willingly do the work and all they have to do is look at it and say, yes, I agree, or no, I don't, they'll gladly do that because you took something off of their plate, right? So you incentivize them to be a part of what you're doing. And now, again, we never know the reach of something we do. So when you do that, maybe then they hear someone say, you know, those operation guys, they don't pay any attention to what anyone wants. And they go, hey, whoa. They come to me once a week and ask me to look at something, or they never put a new policy out without first talking to me. What are you talking about? And the person goes, well, they just always walk right past me. Oh, well, did you know that it's because of this? So now all of a sudden, like, the teaching goes beyond you. Like, all you can do is control the conversation in your space. And when you have a good, safe, strong conversation and you create that value, someone else is going to carry that value on. It doesn't die. I consider it like energy, right? It doesn't stop. It keeps rolling. Now, it may not roll in a way that you ever see the outcome of it. And that's fine. But all of a sudden, if things start moving more efficiently inside the organization, because key groups start communicating with each other and having true communication, you'll see that. And I normally always start with the operations and finance, because those are two groups that do not get along whatsoever, right? One makes money and one spends money, right? So there's a constant headbutting. But when all of a sudden people see those two start working together, they start, all of a sudden all the pieces start falling into place. And that's what effective communication does. It starts letting people have places in the table and understanding where their place is, right? There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, this is your lane. That's strong, because when I know what my lane is, I can operate inside of it. And then I know, hey, this is not my lane. So I need to go talk to this person over here. Right. So now we're not stepping on each other's toes. We're not creating negative space by saying, hey, I was working on that project. Why'd you take it from me? Right. Like, we're creating everyone going down the same lane towards what? Towards that mission statement. Right. And it all links together. And that's what I love about effective communication and policies and procedures in organizations, because when they do it right, everything starts feeding into each other and people start seeing it and then they buy in. And they want to be a part of it. And then all of a sudden you start hearing, hey, did you know that this is like the least effective thing we've ever done? And we've been doing it for 20 years. And you're like, oh, no shit. No one knew that.
I love all of that. You know, as we're wrapping up here, I want to know a couple of things. What haven't you told us that you wanted to get out today? And number two, what do you have on the horizon?
Yeah. So I think the big thing that we didn't really talk about was recapping those conversations. I think every person, whether it's business or professional, you should create that plan. You should create that safety. So after that's done, you need to review your conversations, right? Whether it's talking with the Starbucks barista or talking to the CEO and the board of directors, did you accomplish what you wanted to do, what you planned to do? If you did, great, continue along that path. If you didn't, start taking actions to fix that, to correct that. Because that's important, right? We have to make sure that we're constantly evaluating ourselves and improving ourselves. And when people see the CEO is doing it, when they see the business leaders doing it, when they see the organization do it, they buy into that and they start doing that. So I encourage people to do it in their personal and professional life, because those two bleed together. And anyone who says they don't, you're crazy, right? Because how you treat one is how you treat all. I go back, I'm Christian, so I go back kind of biblical. How you do the little things is how you do the big things. And so you have to really get that communication and that pattern of communication ingrained into everything you do, or you're just going to turn it on 9 to 5 and it's not going to be as effective as you want it to be. And let's be honest, with social media, businesses are open 24/7 now. You can be seen 24/7. So your communication has to be on point 24/7. Because if you decide to reply to an Instagram post somebody puts on your organization's page at 11:40, it can be viewed anytime, any place, right? So you have to really be thinking about that communication and that planning, that safety, and that reviewing in everything you do to make sure that you're constantly moving forward and you're not stagnating.
What's on the horizon?
Yeah. So on the horizon for me is I have a book coming out. I'm working on The Art of Effective Communication as a book, looking for that to come out towards the end of this year. Everything goes well with publishing and such, but would love for y'all to check it out. In the meantime, if you just follow me at Real Talk with Roman on pretty much any of the social media sites, I have a 10-minute podcast as well. So we're really going to dive into some more communication and business leaders in 2021 and touch on those real topics in 10 minutes or less. And I want to help as many people as I can communicate effectively. So that's where my horizon is, growing in that space.
Absolutely. And check out the interview that we did that's on Real Talk with Roman.
Yes, that will be coming out here shortly. It is a great interview. Actually, by the time this airs, it'll already be out. So yes,
you'll already have check it out. Downloads by the time
this... Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Well, it's obviously. Yeah. Well, hey, Roman, thanks for coming on today, providing legitimate, real, actionable intel and value to my audience today. Thank you so much.
Man, my pleasure. I hope that everyone becomes a better communicator, and I hope to see all these nonprofits communicate better and grow just drastically in 2021. That's my wish, is to see all these businesses just take off, because 2020 was a rough year for everyone.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.